Thanks very much. My name is Luke Barrington. Thanks for the introduction, Gary. And on the schedule, it says that my talk is called Machines That Understand Music. That's the title of my thesis. But for today's meeting, I thought I'd tell you about one particular aspect of that, which I'm calling human-powered machine learning. So I work at the Computer Audition Lab here at UCSD, where we do research on signal processing, machine learning, and data mining for analysis of music. And so one of the systems that we've built is a machine that can listen to music and tag it with words. And I'm going to show you how it works. But specifically, we're interested in collecting data to power this machine learning system, which we use a human computation game that I'm going to give you a demo of in a minute. So that's why it's human-powered machine learning, and we'll see how it works in a minute. So the idea, one of the kind of chief research topics in our lab, is the development of these machine learning models that can listen to music and do interesting things with it, like describe it with words, or say that if you like this song, you'd also like these songs, or help, you know, new bands who no one's ever heard of get, you know, in front of audiences that might appreciate their music. And one of the ways that this works is in the kind of classical machine learning setup. We take a handful of examples of some type of song, let's say, you know, romantic music or something like that, and then using signal processing features of the waveform of the audio, the computer actually listens, let's say, to that music, and then with machine learning algorithms, learns to spot patterns that are predictive of the labels that we're interested in. So in this standard kind of supervised machine learning setup, you give the algorithms, you know, a couple hundred or, you know, of labeled examples, and it should learn to be able to apply those labels to millions of new songs. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about how these algorithms work. So the idea is that you take this waveform in, and we chop it up in some sort of signal processing way that turns the, you know, acoustic waveform that we would normally hear in our ears into ones and zeros that computers can listen to. And then we attach or we assign labels to some of these songs. So for example, we might say that, you know, these particular waveforms here are characterized by most listeners to be what you call blues music, okay? And then the idea is that the machine learning algorithms will spot patterns in these waveforms that are kind of in common between all those commonly labeled examples and say that, you know, these patterns are predictive of that concept, blues, and then be able to generalize that to millions and millions of new songs. So without having to have humans listen to all these songs, we can actually label them automatically. So the first step that I want to talk about is how these features work, and you kind of seen a little bit of this already. One of the features that we're using is a signal processing feature called MEL frequency capsule coefficients, and just a little bit interesting because it has some correlates with how humans and how our ears process music. And so the idea is you've got this audio waveform that's just, you know, samples from digital samples of an analog waveform, and you take the frequency spectrum of it. So here now on the x-axis is still time, but on the y-axis is the amplitude at certain frequencies in the audio. So, you know, low frequency on the bottom, high frequency at the top. And then you warp this frequency scale to this y-axis onto what's called a MEL scale, which basically just changes the spacing on the frequency axis from being a linear, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, to sort of how the ear perceives gaps in frequency. So we kind of perceive low frequencies between 0 and 1 kilohertz as approximately linear, but after that it gets kind of exponential. And then finally, you take the capstrum of this, which just basically means you take the log of it, and if you imagine that this was a JPEG image, or this was a bitmap image that you wanted to send over email and you wanted to compress it down to as few numbers as possible, you might take the JPEG of it. So the same concept goes on here. You take the DCT, which is just a transform of this image, and that squeezes all that information in here down to as few numbers as possible to try and compress it into a representation that a computer can use. So here's what it looks like. If you take this audio, I'm going to show you the waveform moving along in time and how the features are being extracted. Not particularly interpretable by humans, but these features are useful for machines to try and capture what's going on in the signal and, you know, do something useful with it. So let's talk about what we're going to actually do with this. So the algorithm that we then use to try and learn something from these features is you've got an audio waveform, you chop it up into short little time segments, and from each of these segments extract one of these MFCC feature vectors. So now you have this big cloud of points in this high-dimensional MFCC space that kind of characterize this song. And we can model this set of points with, you know, some sort of probability distribution or computer model. In this case, we use like an EM algorithm to make a Gaussian mixture model of it, which is kind of a standard machine learning technique. And so now you've got this whole song, which was, you know, this very complicated waveform, just represented as a bunch of kind of clusters of points in this MFCC space. So now this is where we actually add the labels that I was talking to you about. So let's say we have examples of, you know, a couple of romantic songs that, you know, we all listen to and agree that these are our favorite songs for a date or whatever. And you take you learn these song, these models of each song. So now you've represented this kind of, you know, big waveform that's got 44,000 points per second, and you've just represented it as a bunch of clusters in this space. And I can say, well, there's something that all these songs should have in common, right? Maybe one of them is romantic with piano playing, and one of them is romantic with a man singing, and one of them is romantic and it's fast or slow or, you know, whatever else. But there's something that is romantic about them all. There's some essence of romanticness going on in here that you want to extract. So the next stage of the algorithm is to extract the components that each of these song models have in common and learn this higher level tag model that kind of characterizes how romantic acoustic features are distributed in this MFCC space. So we've got now kind of, by agglomerating all of these song level components together, we've learned a tag level representation of romantic or blues or pop or guitar or saxophone or fast or spunky or whatever. So that's our representation of words in this acoustic feature space. So then obviously the last step now is we can take a new song, we chop it up in the same way as we did before, we extract this cloud of MFCC feature vectors, and we can see how does this cloud of feature points match with these tag models that we've learned. So in this case, you can see that all the points kind of over here, whereas our definition of romantic was somewhere over here. So we'd say that this song doesn't very well fit the distribution of romantic, so we wouldn't give this a high score for being romantic. But you can imagine that we have lots of these tag models in this space that, you know, for other words as well, and that might fit, some songs would fit that better. So, okay, that's the kind of boring machine learning part out of the way. So what you get out of all this is a semantic representation of music. So now we can take a new song, put it into this space, and compare it to all of these tag models that we've learned. So for romantic, for pop, for, you know, all these words that, that we've learned from, and get this kind of a semantic distribution or a description of the song that's automatically produced by the machine. So in the case, in the work that we're doing at the moment, we've got a bunch of different categories of words like emotions and genres, different instruments that might be in the music, kind of high-level song characteristics, when you might like to listen to the song, like or where, and some characteristics about the singer. So for example, that Red Hot Chili Peppers song that I played in the video just earlier on, the top 10 words here that are the kind of peaks of, you know, the most likely words that apply to the features of that song are labeled. So like you can see that's kind of an angry and exciting song. The genres are kind of dance, pop, and funk. Has some synthesizer maybe in there. It's very danceable. It might be good to listen to when you want to exercise. And the vocals are strong and have this kind of call and response, give it away thing going on. So this is the... yeah, I'm not going to do any Anthony Kiedis impersonations. So this is the representation that we get out of this. We've turned the acoustic features or the acoustic waveform of a song into this semantic representation. And the idea is that this is kind of like if you were at a gig last night and you wanted to tell your friends, you know, how was the music? You'd say, well, it was this crazy band with, you know, this lead singer with amazing hair and he was screaming and the guitar player was playing these crazy solos and, you know, the drummer was a bit off, you know, and they were, it was kind of a hip-hop funk groove collaboration or something, you know, or whatever. So you'd use these words to try and convey the information about music, and then, you know, your friend might be able to say, well, that sounds amazing, I'd love to see that band, or I hate those guys, I've heard them before. Yeah?
So where'd you get the words from? I can say they got the cluster, but somebody had to put the word
in. Exactly, so that's where the human-powered part comes in. So I'm going to talk about that extensively. So just here's one more representation of what's going on here. This is like a word cloud that you might represent this song with, you know, this semantic representation. So just before we get on to where we got the words, I'm just going to show you a couple of examples. So for example, here is... One of the things you can do about this is pull out these top 10 words and kind of produce robot reviews, we call these, right? So we put the music in and we take out the top two genres and just stick them into these musical Mad Libs, you know? So like, here's this Neil Young song, dedicated to Gary. So you can see that the machine says that like the top two genres are punk and rock and the like top two emotions are not calming and not tender, those kind of not ones or anything. It has lots of guitar and a drum set. It's in a major key. It's kind of electric, and you might listen to it while cleaning the house. I don't know. So you can see that it's not perfect. I'm just going to play one more because I love getting to play hip hop in talks.
Ain't nothing but a G-Bang. So this is too low death, make us pretty good. Death Row is the label that pays, man. Unfadable, so please don't try to fake it.
It doesn't have an acoustic guitar solo, but the rest of the stuff is pretty good. It's good, got a heavy beat, and you'd listen to it at a party. The machine's really good at getting hip-hop for some reason. I don't know why that is. So there's just a couple of examples of one of the applications is you can kind of annotate songs with meaningful words. But what's even cooler, I think, is that you can actually also use this for retrieval. So now let's say you say to me, I'm looking for a song that's tender with female lead vocals, and it's pop, kind of a pop song, right? You might imagine that this kind of constructs one of those semantic profiles. It just has those three words turned on, and everything else is like zero or unknown, right? And then we can use that to like match to all the other songs that we've previously annotated with the machine to figure out what, you know, what songs best match your query. So in this case, if that was your query, the number one song you'd get would be this.
I find a reason to shave my lips.
Yeah, pretty tender and definitely female vocals, right? I'll give you one more. So you can see that like the semantic profile for each song is listed here, and the words that are matching with the query are kind of highlighted in black, and you can see, you know, that these are the peaks that are matching with your query. So this is the application that we're kind of most excited about at the moment, because basically what we can do with this is kind of build a search engine, a semantic search engine for music. We're calling it Google for Music. So what you can do is, you know, you put in just a couple of thousand of human labeled songs. This machine can listen to them, learn the tags, learn how they apply to, you know, general music, and now apply them to millions of songs. So we could, you know, conceivably go on MySpace and pick out all the songs of every band that you've never heard of, tag all their music, and put this search engine up there. So just like, you know, you can't remember the URL of every web page in the web, but if you type in Google, I'm looking for a page that talks about, you know, learning and babies and dancing, and maybe you'll find Marnie's video, right? So the same idea here, that you can type in words like, I'm looking for bluegrass banjo music, and you might find this guy. So this is an example of a prototype interface that we've built for this, I'm going to show some examples written down, but we can actually just do some examples right here. So this is, this is how it looks. I mean, maybe we could type in that I want, you know, some funk music. I should have a horn section, and it would be good to play at a party. And so I'll just scroll it up here. So what you get is things like, you know, James Brown. So this is the prototype that we made up there. At the moment, it's got about 200 words in there, some of which work better than others. But this is the idea. So we like to be able to build this kind of interface, you know, with millions of songs, particularly for bands that are unknown, that you won't find by just, you know, looking for their names or the names of their songs. So that's the idea. We have actually like tried to annotate things like high quality and low quality, or I like this song, I don't like this song, and obviously those ones get less accurate performance than do things like hip hop or blues. I'm going to talk a bit more about the subjectivity problem and all that kind of stuff, but that's certainly a big issue in this. So let's get into that. These are a couple more examples, but we've seen enough of this for the moment. This is exactly what Pandora is. That's a great question. Yeah. So Pandora, basically, is labeling music with semantic concepts, but rather than having some sort of sophisticated machine learning algorithm like we have, they're just paying unemployed jazz musicians to do it, basically. So it takes about half an hour for each of these guys with headphones on, sitting in front of a computer, to like label the song in about 400 semantic categories, like, you know, how much vamping is there, and how jazzy is it, and how much saxophone solo is. But they're doing the exact same thing, though. Once they have this semantic representation, they use that to say, if you like this song, here are the tags that apply to that, now I'm going to find other songs with similar tags to recommend your playlist. That's exactly how it works. And we've worked on that as well, like doing this playlist, kind of, there's tons of stuff you can do once you have this semantic representation. Yeah? Right.
And there's no notion of features up front or anything. Just taking the signal using the EM from high dimensional space, you're moving in that space.
Yeah, so we extract these acoustic features, we learn models on those features that are linked to the tags, and then we use those
to... Acoustic features are just based on simple segmentation of the audience.
Right, exactly, yeah. Actually, at the moment, they're not even segmenting them in any smart way. It's just a fixed time window. We've done some...
Binning everything.
Yeah, every, like, 10 milliseconds, it extracts one vector, and then you've got, you know... At the moment, single scale, yeah. But we have experimented with like segmenting things into verses and choruses first, and then labeling those independently and that kind of stuff. But
you're just looking for emerging categories.
Yeah. Okay. So Terry already raised this question. Like, how do you? The problem is, like, you know, you've got this machine that learns, and once you give these examples, it can figure out, you know, if other millions of other songs are hip hop or blues or funky or whatever. But how do you get these labels? So, you know. And especially, how do you get labels? If you really wanted to build Google for music, you'd want to have every word in the English language characterized. You know, even, you know, tree music or baby music. You know, whatever that may or may not may mean. So that's a problem. And you know, we can all sit here for a couple of hours and do what Pandora is doing and just write down these examples. But that doesn't scale to the kind of millions of songs on the web that we want to annotate. And there's another problem as well, which we find that the output of these things is sometimes wrong. Right? You saw that, you know. It thought that Snoop Dogg song had an acoustic guitar solo, so that was a mistake. And you'd like to be able to pick up those mistakes and like feed them back in and say, no, this is not an acoustic guitar solo song, you know, but, you know, here's one that is, or something like that. So I'm going to go over a couple of methods that we've tried for collecting this data and some of the strengths and weaknesses of each one. So the first thing that we did, we said, let's just go online and mine this text off the web, right? So there's a bunch of websites out there. One of them is allmusic.com, which is a great one. that has reviews of artists, you know, bios, and even has song-level reviews, which is what we wanted. So, for example, I don't know if you can read this, but this is the allmusic.com review for that song, the Chili Peppers song that they played at the start. And it has some great words in here. It's like if you were just to automatically data mine this stuff and pull out the words that you're interested in, like it says rap, it has jumping, sliding, popping bass lines, it has a hard rocking riff, it's kind of funk metal. So this is nice stuff that you can pull out. But it does have some other stuff that, you know, a lot of noise in there that makes it more difficult to get really meaningful information out here. So for example, it says that it has a visually distinctive video, which is going to be hard to learn from the acoustic waveforms. But even more kind of nefariously, it has things like, you see the word pop, so maybe you're looking for pop examples. But then if you look a bit further, it says, this song didn't achieve the massive pop success of its follow-up, right? So this is actually not a pop song. So this kind of problems happen a lot. So the good thing is, of course, you can just, you know, leave your computer on overnight and you can get millions of, you know, web pages that have lots of data in there. The problem is the data is quite noisy, and also what we call the long tail is quite poorly represented. So the long tail is this idea that's kind of common in a lot of internet markets. So if you have a lot of content that sells, or you have a small amount of content that sells almost all the volume in the market. So this happens with books, it happens with CDs, and you know, like Britney Spears, U2, and Radiohead account for like 50% of worldwide CDs, and everyone else is in this tiny little long tail where there's millions of them out there, and they sell very little, or they're consumed very little. And so these guys, you don't find a lot of reviews for like my band. You don't find any reviews, in fact. So this is the first thing we tried. And then we went a little bit smarter and went on this website, Last FM, which is another popular radio station, kind of like Pandora. But one of the things that allows its users can tag music that they like. So that there's kind of these are social tags, which are, you know, a bit more focused on the task that we're interested in. So now people are writing things like for the same song, you know, funk rock, and it came out in 1991, and it's got its rock, which are, you know, great tags. But it other has things like, you know, I know the lyrics, or this song was in Rock Band 2, which are, you know, tricky, or, you know, Mucka Mucka, which I don't even know what that means. But, you know, so there's a lot of garbage in there still, you know. So maybe we, you know, if someone's applying this Mucka Mucka label in some consistent way, we could possibly learn that, but, you know, whether or not that's interesting is, we'll have to see. So again, you can get lots of annotations here. It also has this problem of not representing the long tail very well. So our next idea, we tried this and we trained systems on it and they worked okay. So our next idea was like, well, look, let's do it right. Let's do what Pandora are doing. And we actually paid UCSD undergrads to come into our lab and sit in the basement and put headphones on and like listen to these songs. We gave them a questionnaire that was actually based on some of the concepts that Pandora are asking. And they had to fill these questionnaires out for, you know, for $10 an hour. They love this job. So, you know, asked them, is there male lead vocals? Is there female lead vocals? And so on. This is just like a little snapshot. We asked them about 200 different concepts. And we call this data set the Cal 500 data set. I'm going to refer to it again. Cal is our lab, the computer audition laboratory, and there was 500 songs. So that's where it gets the name from. So this is great. The data was really reliable and precise, and it was specifically tailored to the application that we wanted to do. Like, it's collecting the tags for the machine learning system that we want to train on. The downside, of course, just like Pandora said, it's quite expensive, and it was, you know, thankfully I had some IGRT human subjects money that paid for this, so thanks to NSF. It's laborious, it took us ages to do this, and it doesn't scale, you know, so this is the problem. But this is the kind of canonical grand truth that I'm going to use to compare against in other experiments, because this is exactly the data that we wanted to collect. So the question is, how could we get this in a cheaper, easier, quicker, larger scale way? And so then the kind of combination of all this hunting around and sleeping on the internet and paying undergrads led us to the idea of making a game. So like rather than paying people money to do this, maybe we can just get them to do it for free by, you know, giving them some other incentive, right? So we built this prototype game called Listen Game, where we, you know, this is how it works. You're hearing a little clip of music, you're playing in real time with other people, and you're seeing words that might describe the music, and you choose which one you think is the best and which one you think is the worst. And so now we're collecting, when lots of people agree on a particular word, we said that's an example that we'll use to train on. And this worked pretty well. So we had about 600 people play it, and we got, you know, quite a lot of associations between songs and tags, and we were able to train our machine learning system on this data, and it worked, you know, not as well as the Cal 500 data set, but, you know, approaching the accuracy. The problem was that to get even these 600 players took a lot of coercion of friends and family, and we were like, please, 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 the conference deadline's in a week, everyone play it. And, you know, so it worked okay, but the problem, you know, it's not trivial to build a computer game that people think is fun. Especially if your training is in electrical engineering and not in like cognitive science or human interaction or that kind of stuff. So we had a bit of a challenge with this, but we did see that the data was great, and if we could have just got more of it and made it viral and fun, then it would have been the silver bullet that we were looking for. So this led us to, this is kind of completing the loop now, right? If we got this couple of labeled examples that the machine learning system analyzes, produces millions of new labeled examples, but we collect them all from these social games, right, where people are doing the work for free. But we had to make a better social game. So that's kind of what the last part of the talk is going to be about, which is a game called Herded that we've designed, that I've designed. It's been that kind of the last chapter in my thesis, I guess. And for this, we kind of went back to the drawing board about how to build a game that would actually be fun and still collect the data that we're interested in. So we use this user-centered design process with a lot of iterations where we build a prototype, test it, and see if people liked it and why they didn't like it or why they didn't understand it, go back to the drawing board. We also thought it was really important to put music in a social context. So a lot of human computation games out there are just you against the machine or you against one other person. But with music, it's not just my opinion that's the one true answer, but it's kind of an average consensus of a group. And finally, one of the things that makes Herded stand out from a lot of other human computation games that you might have seen before, like maybe ESP game or stuff, is that we've got the machine learning system already, the target that we want to train this machine learning system is already in place, and so we've actually got this integrated with the game. So as the game collects examples of rock songs, it learns what rock is, and it's getting good accuracy on rock, then it stops asking about rock and says, well, let's move on to pop now, or let's move on to more complicated concepts. So it kind of has this, like I showed you, that feedback loop on the previous slide. It's really, learning and then asking questions about things that it doesn't know about. So I'm going to give you a quick demo of Herded. Hopefully this works. So this game is like what I've been building for the last year or so. I'm running out of time. Okay, cool. It's up on Facebook right now. And so you log in, we get your Facebook picture and your name, which is interesting for trying to get consensus across demographics, which is somewhere we're going next. You can choose what genre of music you like. Any requests? Blues. Okay, cool. So I choose. Cool. That's exactly how much time I need. So hopefully, if my web is working. So, okay, it's a bit zoomed out. So it's connecting me up now in real time with other players who are out there. And it starts playing some music. And then the question is, what mood is this? It sounds pretty mellow to me. So I make my choice. Hopefully before the time runs out, I've inputted this decision. And then all these other people are doing the same thing. And then when the time runs out, we see I chose mellow. What did everyone else choose? So somebody chose eerie, which isn't too bad. Some people didn't like it. Anyway, I had 40% agreement, so I get 40 points. That's basically how it works. And the idea is to encourage me to choose words that everyone else will choose or that kind of will be agreed upon. Who is that? So the game goes on like this. It plays a new song and asks a new question. There's a bunch of these different mini games. So we'll see if we can complete it. So this one's kind of pretty sad and calm. But I drop my X down and we'll see where everyone else goes. Yeah. These are like we're all, the idea is that we're all at the rock concert together and we're like saying, this song sucks or this song is really good. I don't know, there are Tony and Brad and Matt and Kyle and Charlie and Joe. Some of them are friends of mine, definitely. Yeah, no, everyone's back in our lab right now. So this is how it works. Sometimes it asks weird words like basset clarinet. This is an example where we kind of think that's an error in our database. Whoa, this is a real strange one. So we have literally thousands of words in our data set that we're asking questions about. That one looks like it's an error. I don't know. These tags came from Last.fm, that site that I showed. So there are some of those garbage tags in there. And the idea is we should be able to filter them out and say no one's choosing this word, so let's get rid of it. Okay, so that's how this works. Let's just see if there's one more new game that comes up. Yeah, so now here is you have to choose what's the genre. Anyway, I'm gonna move on because I'm running out of time. So that's enough of you. Yeah, herded.org. Check it out. I need the data. So, okay, so that's how it works. So this is the article, if you don't care about that. So just some quick statistics about Herded. We've had mostly male players, which is not unsurprising because it's a computer game. But we're actually, the target demographic for these kind of casual mini games on the web is actually middle-aged housewives. So we haven't been doing a very good job of getting that target demographic. But these are just kind of the ages that we have had one 90-year-old player, but that could be a fake Facebook. I don't know. Mostly people from the US, a little bit, quite good in Australia as well. And this has been our like number of users over the last 6 months. So we're up to about 7,000 users now. We got a big bump here. So one of the challenges is like not only to design this game in a way that would be fun and people would actually enjoy playing it, but also then to actually get it out there, right? So that's why we put it on Facebook. It's a lot easier to kind of, you know, get this viral promotion. But even still, we had to do a lot of things. Like we got featured on Slashdot, which was huge. It got us a huge bump, lots of extra traffic. But trying to promote it with blogs and news sites and, you know, magazines and trying to get people to spread the word. So tell your friends, tell them to tell their friends, and so on and so on and so on. But that's how we're collecting this. Of course, like I said, Facebook is a great way of, like, you can just invite all your friends and they can challenge you there and post your high score and say, I just beat you, you know, ha ha ha, try and, you know, get one ahead of me. So here, I just want to talk about the data that we actually collected. So it's only been out there for a couple of months, and we've had nearly 7,000 total players. This is actually data from the end of 2009, so that we've had a bit more since then. About 100,000 rounds have been played, so like where they hear a clip and see some words, with about 5,000 songs. And this is kind of the data set that we've got so far. This is the association between one song and one word. These are the examples that we can actually use to train our system. And in the background, you can kind of see a tag cloud of, you know, how many of all the different words that we've got in there and how many times we've had each of them tagged. So this is the final thing I'm going to show you is some sort of evaluation of whether or not this data is actually achieving the goal that we set out to get over. So we've had about 900 total tags where we needed to get some agreement between them. Yeah, I'm happy for you to play this game and I'll stop talking. We've had, you know, 5 people actually agree on words, which obviously, you know, getting agreement between a contestant between a group is what's important. Then we wanted we need to have a minimum number of examples that we can actually use to learn that word. It's not just enough to have one hip hop song. The machine learning concept will just learn that song, but not hip hop in general. So we need to have at least 10 examples of each concept. And then the final number here is the number of tags that we have, where we have enough examples that they also, those tags intersect with the Cal 500 data set that I said we paid the kids to annotate here in UCSD. So we can kind of compare them to the grand truth, which is what we're interested in at the moment. So our evaluation metric at the moment is to take this herd of data, train our machine learning representation, like I showed you at the very start, and then test those predicted tags using that Cal 500 grand truth as the kind of the gold standard. And then in comparison to that, we'll also train a system on the Cal 500 data set. So like using that, you know, gold standard with a training and test split, so it's not, you know, biased, and then testing on the same data. So the idea is we'd like the machine learning system trained on this herd of data to be able to do, you know, as well or better than the Cal 500. Unfortunately, we're not quite there yet. So the red graph is showing the number of tags that we have examples for. So we're up to 60 now, but this is, like I said, at the end of the year. And the black line is showing kind of the percentage of Cal 500 performance that we're getting using the herd of data. So if we're predicting hip-hop with 90% accuracy using Cal 500, at the moment we're predicting it with maybe 85% accuracy using Herded. And over average over all the tags, the Herded data gets about 93% of the performance that this kind of gold standard gets. Now, the gold standard itself is not getting 100% accuracy. That's the idea. That's the whole point, because like Terry kind of brought the question up. It's, you know, my definition of what rocks is probably different than everyone else's here. So there is inter-subject disagreement, that kind of stuff. But we're hoping that if we could do as well as that, you know, Pandora-style, perfect, you know, human label data by doing it with this game, that would be kind of what we'd like to achieve. So the last slide, which is very hard to see, same. The black line is the exact same thing, and this just shows the tags that have kind of come on. You know, when we started in March, we just had like 3 tags that we had actually examples of, and as we've gone on, we've gotten a lot more tags, and some of them, like if you look at the rock track here, it started off that the couple of examples that we had were only getting us about 80% of the perfect herded performance, of the perfect Cal 500 performance. But as we've gotten more data, this line's gone up and up and up and up and up until actually now it's doing a little bit better than the Cal 500 data. So as we've gotten more examples, you know, we can actually learn to be as good as or better than the human labeled ones. So that's pretty much it. After going through this data mining process, we figured out that human computation is a nice way to get, you know, collect a lot of data in a scalable, cheap way. And this game is particularly designed to integrate perfectly with our machine learning application. So it's collecting exactly the data that we want for the job that we need that we're trying to do. And it's better than, you know, paying people to do a survey because it scales a lot faster. So hopefully we can take a combination of signal processing, machine learning, and then human computation to build, you know, music search engines, find songs that you love, help me get a record deal or whatever. So that's it. Thanks very much. Yeah, Gary, let's have you first. Gary.
So if you were to ask me for my advice on music features, I wouldn't tell you to start by chopping the music up into little 10 millisecond things. So it seems like what you've done is actually remove time from your features.
Yeah, that's completely true.
So, and I can imagine why it does well on hip hop, because it's got this which happens in 10 milliseconds, right? And so I imagine a lot of the errors it makes are on the kinds of rhythm things have. Is that true or not?
It's I thought exactly, if you asked me my advice, I would have said the same thing until I did it. And what turns out, so there's a couple of caveats. The features, while they're over a very short time window, we actually use their deltas as well. So we look at the first and second derivatives from their kind of neighboring features. So it gets a little bit more context. So it does capture some rhythmic features. And in fact, you'd be surprised how much it does learn these things. And I can't exactly say how. Basically, these NSCC features are you can imagine that they're capturing the timbre of the music. So like kind of the global sound, which doesn't capture like how fast the beats are coming. But if you find that, you know, one song has, you know, 10,000 features that all correspond to big drum beats, another one only has, you know, 1% of the features that correspond to big drum beats, that gets you some notion of speed. But yeah, it does. We're working on now. This is like called a bag of features model. So you just take all these features, throw in a big bag, juggle them around, and you know, the first can be last, or you can it's order independent. We're working now on that. That's simply because it's easier to model that. So from a machine learning perspective, it's easier to learn models of those types of features rather than trying to figure out not just how they sound, but how they all come one after the other. And now we are working on models that do have that temporal order in there, but I didn't show that in this talk. So we're working on that, but it's not there yet.
I think I have the microphone.
Yeah, sorry, whoever. Yeah.
So I guess I want to give you feedback from a user's perspective. You know, someone, like I use Pandora, right, other systems like this, and I listen to music while I work, okay? And at first I was delighted how these things work, and then I got kind of frustrated at kind of, you know, a ceiling of improvement. I thought, oh, I'm going to discover some music. And I mean, I think that the issue of having to label, you know, give like input labels that describe music that I like may work really well for someone who knows a lot about music and has that vocabulary. For some of us, we may not have that. So that's one thing. And then there's the issue of, you know, saying what you like, right? So in Pandora, you get to say, do I like this, do I don't? Mm-hmm. When I work, I forget to do that. So right. I don't get an improvement in the system. Yeah. And what I was thinking about, you know, seeing you after Marnie, is that it'd be kind of cool to have Cert watching me while I'm not thinking about the music, but likely I'm doing different things when I like or don't like a song. You know, and you might get some people to give you information about whether they like or don't like a song, so that you can see the facial characteristics when they and maybe use that and have that as a user input.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting idea. Actually, the first paper that I ever wrote about music and that kind of got me on this whole research track was a system that sort of worked in the opposite direction, where we were like monitoring patients, let's say elderly people who are, you know, on their own in a room, and we had a camera on their face, and the idea is that you are working. And that you don't want to be distracted with like an alarm when your granddad falls asleep or when he's like looking agitated, but maybe the music starts to change in some subtle way that says, like, you know, it feels more relaxed. That means he's feeling more relaxed, or it gets more agitated, meaning he's more agitated. But I think, yeah, your idea of trying to capture these like indirect cues to give feedback into the whole playlist is a great one. Because
you might pick up some features that you're not picking up with labels, you know, and that are temporally related to the music. So I might, you know, make some facial movements whenever something happens in the music, and you could capture it.
I mean, even things like nodding your head and, you know, is a good cue of like what kind of rhythm that you're looking for. Something like that.
So if you make millions of dollars with this, they remember me.
I will definitely. Who's got the yeah?
Do you think that you could eventually go back from the categories to the music to create music? And
yeah, that's a great idea. So at the moment, you can probably tell from the way that the model is set up now that all you would get, you know, we could sample from this, you know, romantic distribution and just produce, you know, examples of MFCC features that are highly likely to be romantic. But then actually putting those MFCC, you know, these like discrete feature vectors that come from random points of the song into, you know, constructing them or synthesizing them into new music is challenging. So it's certainly something that people have asked a lot about, and I haven't figured out the right way to do it yet, but I think it could be pretty fun, yeah, if you could just create songs on the fly, yeah.
Okay, my turn. Do you find that the feature space has discrete, linearly separable clusters that correspond to natural categories, or do you see a lot of cross-cutting categories?
Yeah, there is a lot of cross-cutting. So, I mean, even just in the tags that we've chosen, a lot of them are correlated. So, you know, if you have rock and punk, you know, if one's high, the other one's likely to be high, or, you know, if you have distorted guitar and angry or something like that, these tend to go together quite a lot. So definitely it's not just, you know, you can't divide it up in a nice parceled way, but there is something that you can learn it from in the space, definitely. So.
We sort of need to take a break. So you can ask Luke questions afterwards. All right, let's thank Luke again.